And I don't want you to miss a minute of that. So we're going to move on to care, but I want to get, how about three people who want to share a new idea in the realm of communication? Three people. Not all at once, though. Yes, sir.
So the communication is a two-way street, and through the communication allows you to develop teamwork for the company or the culture.
So what are you going to do different?
So actually, the car drill was really interesting. So in the staff meetings, probably have everybody have their ideas for the week or the promises, and then we can go around and then see what.
Give everybody a chance. Give everybody a chance to talk.
Could you repeat that?
So that idea around character connection, you know, I said the easiest way to get all of the information out is to go A, B, C, D, E, F, G. So on his team, at their, you know, weekly meeting, they can literally go around the table and, you know, what new ideas or things you need to communicate, like give everybody time. And you know what? When it comes, like Nancy may say, I don't have anything this week. That's okay. Because at least we gave her the respect of giving her that time. Two more. Yes, ma'am.
I think it's really important to ask the team, what do you need to meet? And have them tell you what you need. Because then, if you're going to have those difficult conversations, there's always, you can also go back to, you know, we've talked about this in the past too, do you have everything you need to do what you need?
Right.
And if you don't, then you have to say you've given them a chance to articulate what you need. And then you have to call.
Yes. Anything you need of me, what can I do better, different
for you?
Mm-hmm. One more.
And I think when you say it's a policy violation, it just simplifies it so much. It makes it more human and an easier interaction because it really is just that simple.
Yeah.
It was a policy violation, which means that your policies need to be outlined and in place and clear to all your employees. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of on the front end, and then you can easily carry that through during their.
Right. That does make it a little simpler. So moving on to care. So up to now in our day together, we all select people, or someone in our company does. We all train people, or someone in our company does. We all communicate with people. But the topic we're about to walk into may be something we're not doing at all. Or it may be that it's not to the extent that we're going to show you at Disney. And when we talk about care, sort of the final topic of the day, I want to tell you that recognition is a part of this, but I'm not really talking about recognition here. I'm talking about intentional, genuine care. So our insight around this, the extent to which you genuinely care for your people is the extent to which they will care for your customers and each other. And I really want you to think about that for a minute. The extent to which you genuinely care for your people is the extent to which they will care for your customers and each other. And people ask us every day, how do you get your cast members to be so friendly? How do you get your cast members to provide such great service? That, my friends, is the secret sauce. Because if you genuinely care for someone, they will genuinely care in return, and they pay it forward. If you're in a place, you think about the place where you feel the most happy. Whether it's in your home, whether it's a particular vacation destination, where is it you feel most happy and content? Because when you feel that way, you just exude it to the rest of the world. That's what we try and do for our cast every day, is genuinely care for them. So we're talking about intentional care. Care for them as individuals. Care for them in their personal lives. Care for them beyond what might be mandated. Sometimes we do good things for people, but we do it because it's mandated. Because the collective bargaining agreement says that we have to do this. Or the law says that we have to do this. Now, we're not talking about any of that because that is a necessity. If you're in a union environment like we are in a union environment, there are collective bargaining agreements that stipulate things that you must provide. And the law does stipulate things that you must provide. We're not talking about those things. We're talking about genuine individual care for every person that you work with. Caring for your people creates an emotional connection. Now, what do we know about emotional connections? What does it lead to? It's that big word that starts with an E. Engagement. Rational and emotional, and which one trumps? Emotional. This is the emotional part. So if you are in there genuinely caring for your people, engagement goes whoop, and the curve goes whoop, because that's the emotional piece. That is how to close the gap between what you have now, that bell curve maybe, and what you'd like to have, that curve that's pushed to the right. So I actually want to go straight to an illustration. And the illustration is from the Disney College program. So it's an internship program that we offer in California and in Florida. We bring in students from all over the globe to come and work for 5 months, 7 months, or a year, depending on whether they're domestic or international. And we're going to show you, this is in Florida because it was where I was able to shoot the video. But what's nice is I was part of the team that started the college program here in California as well. So both sides have a living, learning, and earning component. You live in complexes adjacent to property or close to property. You work in any one of 23 to 25 roles, frontline roles in the organization, and you have the opportunity to participate in educational courses to further on your education as you are here in your work experience. So what I want to show you is a video, and it is an example of how we are able to care, genuine, intentional care, for the over 8,000 students that come to work with us every year. The Disney College program started in 1981, quite a while ago, and has been going on for over 30 years. Disney College program is an internship program for students in college. They can come from across the country, anyone enrolled in school, freshmen up to seniors, and any major can participate. Students participating on the Disney College program or the international programs benefit numerous ways. They either build their resume and their CVs, they build transferable skills, so communication skills, problem-solving skills. So a student coming down, regardless of their major, will develop themselves and be more marketable as they move forward. But we as a company also feel it's very important to give back to these students. They are huge value to us, and they are our guests. So very similar to how we expect these students to treat our guests, we also have high standards of how we are treating them. So with dignity, with respect, we want to give back to them and make sure that they have a tremendous experience so that they indeed then will treat our guests very well. So it is really, it's a complex program, but in the long run, we all benefit.
The service recruiter role is kind of like a concierge service. They're responsible for, at the conclusion of the interviews, placing the students in the best fit role possible, along with the locations around our resort. They're going to take things into account like, what's the student's major? What's their degree? What's their aspirations while they're on the program? And what past experience do they bring to the role that makes them the best fit quality? We may ask the student, do you have a special story or a Disney memory attached to one of our theme parks or our resorts? And if they say yes, and they share that story with us, then we'll try to go about placing them in that location that best ties in with that story. We even have a service recruiter who's dedicated to those future applicants who are coming on the program with special needs. Their situation is taken care of before the onboarding process even starts. Our main focus is we want these students to have the most incredible experience they possibly can on our Disney College program.
When I drove in this morning with my mom, I was very nervous, very apprehensive, not sure what was going to happen. But then as soon as we got here, everyone was very welcoming and very really cared about us. So they really wanted us to feel comfortable, and now I feel very comfortable with where I am.
Well, family and friends are waiting for the new cast members to finish the process. We have coffee and water and other refreshments. We have several cast members who are part of the housing leadership team there to answer questions. We provide a tour for the model apartment, and we also have a guide that we give them that's pretty similar to some of the materials that the cast member gets when they arrive, but just a little bit more abbreviated so that parents and friends and family will have a reference.
I'm very pleased with the apartment, with the amenities that it comes with. The room, it's very clean, it's very nice.
We give a tour of the model apartment for two reasons. First, so that those family and friends can see the living environment and get a little peace of mind they're going to be well taken care of in these apartments. Second, a little more practical, they're probably going to need to do some shopping.
I realize the items that we didn't bring, the cleaning supplies, the little signs around just gave you a better understanding of what the expectations are here at Disney. Hopefully she'll come home and clean later.
We know that there's a correlation between the success of the participants in our program and the people supporting them back home. So we have tools and resources here on arrival to give those parents and those friends and family those resources. But there's an added bonus in that now we have a new affinity for Disney in these people. They've seen how we care, and they're more likely to come back and spend money in our parks and visit their participants while they're in the program.
The caring, compassion, and personable experience that I've had has been wonderful. I feel like all the cast members here really do care about my daughter, as well as all of the other new cast members that'll be joining, and I'm very comfortable with this.
I'm very excited to start my program and be here.
Once all participants arrive to the program and get settled into their apartments, they find out that Disney Housing Office organizes a lot of events and trips, and one of them is the Asian market trip.
Yeah, of course we're excited, because they're not much Asian here. It's so good that Disney actually concerning about the people, this little group in here. So we're so happy to see something like that.
We started offering this trip because a lot of our Asian participants came to our office and started asking if it's possible to find them a store where they can find their authentic food, Oriental food. So we started organizing this trip. We used to go there like maybe once a month. We shuttled the student to the Asian market store. As the program grew, the demand for the Asian market trip grew as well. So we started organizing two trips to the Asian market every month, and every time we go there, our buses are full.
I can buy a lot of food from China, and I can see a lot of Chinese people there. It's made me no more homesick.
We know that these participants come from far, far away. We do organize these Asian market trips for them so that they feel comfortable into their new homes.
The primary purpose for our Disney Internships and Programs office is to be an on-site location where our cast members can come and receive assistance and care for any of their needs, primarily around their work and earning experience. We expect our participants to go out into our parks and resorts each and every day and create magical moments and go above and beyond for our guests. We want to make sure that we're modeling the basics for them. We want to take care of their issues and answer their questions and make sure that when they leave our office, they feel great about themselves and our programs and ready to go out into their roles in parks and resorts and take great care of our guests. Sometimes we deal with cast members who are upset or homesick or dealing with difficult personal situations, and we have two great resources on hand to help with that, and these are homemade chocolate chip cookies, which we bake every day for our students. And we also keep Duffy around because he's a great comfort to students who are dealing with problems or concerns or maybe a little bit homesick.
You know, our participants and students are here and have taken a semester or a year off of school to come spend with us, and it's very important that we give them the trust and the love and the respect that they need and deserve. We also know, from a selfish standpoint, that they then will turn around and respect our guest with that degree, and that is what Disney is known for. So it really is, it's a great business decision for us, but it's also something that we do because this program is so very important to us. The biggest tip that I could offer anybody who is leading
full-time employees or interns or executives is to care, to really care about your employees or what we call cast members, spend time with them, personalize the attention that you give them, recognize them as individuals, don't treat them just with everybody else, and take that time to do it. You know, we invest heavily in our human capital. We also invest heavily in our infrastructure at Disney, but we know our infrastructure is nothing without the human capital. And that's our cast members, are who we are. It's what makes us special. It's what makes people return and talk about us. And it would be absolutely the biggest tip that I could provide to anybody.
So what is your impression in terms of care? Because there's a lot going on there. So I just, you know, what is the thing that stood out to you? You're just shaking your head.
Well, I have two friends who are graduates.
Oh!
There.
Over the top attention. Like that. What else kind of stood out to you?
It's very genuine.
It's very genuine. Now, how about if I tell you this? They're an incremental labor force for Disney. So, do I have to rent a bus and take them to the Oriental Market twice a month? No. Not for incremental labor source. Why do we do it? Because if you're not from here, if you're from Asia, you cannot buy your groceries at a super Walmart. You can't do it. And if your tummy doesn't feel right, how do we expect you to go to work and treat anybody in a positive way? So, I mean, it's as you know, sort of simple as that. You know, we do that, and it's cost us money to do it. You know, we rent the bus, it cost us to do it. But if you're happy at home, and that's your home for 5 months, 7 months, or a year, then you show that to your, and I do want to be clear, there's more than one of those Duffy bears. Every time I hear that, I think, wow, that kind of sounds like there's only one bear. They keep boxes and boxes of those bears. So if there's something, you know, that's happening at home that you cannot be at home, and it's, you know, sort of a personal strain on you, someone from the housing department would go to your apartment and they would sit with you and listen. And even if all you want to do is cry, and we would give you that bear, and we would say, we know you can't be at home. We know we can't be with you 24 hours a day, but Duffy can. So if you need him, on an arrival day, there might be 200 or 300 students arriving on a particular day. Typically, it's more like 175 to 200. On days like that, they bake in that office 1,200 chocolate chip cookies. Now, is it about the cookies? No, it's not about the cookies. The cookies are what bring people into the office, but then you'll watch students and they'll say, you know, I just came in for a cookie. Okay, have a cookie, have as many as you like. And they'll take a cookie and they'll sit for a moment and they'll start to eat their cookie. And then you see them go, hey, Wanda, do you have a minute? Can you talk? So it's not about the cookies. And it's not about the bears. That is just our entry point to being able to have a real conversation with these students about something that might be a real need for them. You know, so we show you that to let you know that's genuine, because we really do care about these kids.
Yeah. Do all of the parks and resorts have the intern program, or is it just specialized to a few?
In Florida, in California. So we have it, you know, all over. It's at least 23 job titles, or maybe more now, on both coasts.
So the Asian kids are all brought over from China to Vietnam, and they're brought to the States.
Yes.
Wow.
So we have, at Epcot, specifically in Florida, we have a visa. It's a particular visa that's a cultural representative visa. So they work there as a representative of their country. So I'm from Houston. You don't want me working in the China Pavilion. I mean, I don't know anything about China. I've been to China, but that's all I know. And I keep telling people, when they build a redneck pavilion, I have a job. But until that happens, we need to bring people from China to staff the China Pavilion, from Morocco to the Moroccan Pavilion, and it is a huge culture shock.
Yeah.
what you just said is huge. And the most huge was putting him on a bus and taking him to a Super Walmart. Because if you're from Beijing, guess what? There's no bus system taking you to a Super Walmart. And you can't buy your food there. So they came to housing and said, can you please help us? So we did. The thing that is the weirdest, for me it was weird, the moment they walk in, 1 foot over the threshold of the Asian market, they don't speak English anymore. Because they're home. They're home. So there's Cantonese in this corner, and there's Mandarin in this corner, and they're home. And we give them 3.5 hours. Does it take 3.5 hours to shop for groceries? No. But we give them that because it's an experience and it makes them feel like they're at home again. Yeah.
I was just going to ask, can you follow up then with the initial meet visa for these folks if they wanted to stay in the States?
No, it's an H-2B to come over as a cultural rep and then they return home. But it would be very common to have someone come from Beijing and end up working at Hong Kong Disneyland. Or I'm sure soon to be Shanghai Disneyland. That's fairly common. Or go to work on our cruise ship because it's a different, because it's a Bahamian registry. It's a little bit different casting is.
Have you got a number? How many of these kids decide to stay, or is that an option?
Well, you know, it's the best question you could possibly ask. And for many, many years, we did not keep track. For years, it's only recently that we've started kind of keeping track of people and whether they stay or go. A large percent, now we encourage them, we push them actually, go back and finish your degree. We'll always be here. Go back, finish your degree. But a large percentage do come back. It would be very common to meet just about it. Ryan came from the college program, didn't you?
Yep.
In Florida or here? Florida?
Based in Florida, then came back to California.
So it's very common. We have many executives that came from a college program because it's been around now 27 or 29 years. It's getting close to. So that's it. Just an example we wanted to show you of what we mean when we talk about genuine care. So genuine intentional care for the individual and the needs of the individual. So you may be, we've been talking kind of going back and forth between sort of a tactical approach and a philosophical approach. So you may be asking yourself, you know, how do you operationalize care? We do it this way, by intentionally finding as many ways as practically possible to care for people. So do you in the room, do you have like a marketing strategy? Any companies that are in the room, do you have a marketing strategy? Do any of you have a pricing strategy? Then you should have a care strategy. If you have those other things, and we know desired behaviors equals results, and we know care gets you to those desired behaviors, then you should have a care strategy. Operationally, some building blocks from us. And some companies, care is just a byproduct of something else. So what we're talking about is it not being a byproduct of a collective bargaining agreement or of a law, but it becoming intentional. And the next sort of building block for us is to let you know human resources is not the only department that should care. But for some companies, the recognition department sits in human resources. So they'll say, well, that's HR's job. It's HR's job to care. They're the ones that do the recognition. No. It's all of our jobs to care about each other. And it's all of our jobs to recognize each other, which we're going to get to before the end of the day. Care is everybody's responsibility. And as practically possible, so intentionally, find as many ways as practically possible. It doesn't mean spending a huge amount of money. You know, it just means you have to put forth the effort. You know, and it could be as simple as in your communication. You know, it doesn't have to be something that's a big, costly endeavor. The second piece of the operationalization of care is actually the one that, as a leader in any organization, you're probably familiar with. I will tell you, as many years as I've been a leader at Disney, I have never approached a cast member and told them, I am here to listen to you, that they have not come back to me and said, okay, let me tell you all the things that I don't like. Because that's what you're going to hear first, right? When you say communication, I'm listening, I'm an intentional listening kind of leader. Okay, let me tell you all the things that provide a hassle for me that I don't like. So the second part of operationalizing care, proactively manage the day-to-day work experience to make it hassle-free as much as possible. And believe me, you don't have to go far before you find out what those hassles are, because they will tell you. We're defining hassle as anything that disrupts the balance of an employee's normal work routine. So anything that sort of messes with the way that I normally would do things. When you take the irritations in the workplace away and make people's life easier, that's an engagement lever. People go, oh, our parking lot had potholes in it, they fixed it, cha-ching. Guess what, they're more engaged. And they don't think to themselves, I cannot believe I'm driving through this parking lot again. And then they're irritated when they walk in, and if they're irritated when they walk in and the first interaction they have to have is with a guest, you don't have to the right side behavior. So if you take those irritations away, it becomes an engagement lever. It affects behavior and performance. So I want you to think about the hassles or the irritations in your workplace today and how many of them that you could get rid of fairly inexpensively. And I'm going to show you an example of an irritation in our workplace and a gentleman who was able to get rid of it, albeit not as inexpensively as what we're asking you to think about. So this example comes from our Hong Kong Disneyland park. This gentleman's name is Soon Yi. Here's what Soon started to watch and realize. He's the costuming manager at Hong Kong Disneyland. So at Hong Kong Disneyland, it works a little bit differently than it does domestically. At that park, there's only about 6,000 total cast members. Well, it wouldn't be outside the realm of reality to have 3,000 of them show up at the same time. Park hours are a little shorter, so you might have more people arriving to open the park at the same time. They arrive largely by public transportation. People aren't driving their own cars in Hong Kong, parking in a parking lot. You know, it's going to be public. It's going to be much more like California. A lot of public transportation here in California, not so much in Florida. And that's what happens in Hong Kong. In fact, there's a metro station that's about, 150 yards from the cast services building. So you cannot leave work in your costume because we don't want customers on the train, you know, it's a small world costume, that's weird and creepy, right? You see that on the train? So you have to turn in your costume at night, you get a fresh one in the morning. So Soon Yi was noticing, because of the number of people who could potentially be scheduled at the same time to open the park, you could have a queue to get your costume that was 5 minutes, but it could be up to 90 minutes. And we're not paying you for that time. So imagine if you knew I have to get to work 90 minutes early so I can stand in line and get a costume. How happy would you be about that? Probably about as happy as these folks were. And what the added sort of bonus that we got is we're in Asia. And we're in Asia, people typically don't speak out about something that they don't believe is fair. So Soon had to watch it. So he did. And he watched, he would sort of follow people as they went out to their work location, and he would see that it took about the same number of minutes that they stood in queue to brush that feeling off and be able to provide great service. So we had anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes, you know, that people had to sort of work it out of their system before they could perform correctly. So we knew he had a problem. He needed to reduce the hassle of reducing the queue. So I want to show you a video that is the example of what he was able to do. And then here in a couple of minutes, we're actually going to go and show you how we were able to do it.
Hong Kong is a very fast-paced economy. Things move very fast. When cast members, the first thing they'll come here is to get themselves costumed and dressed up. And we don't want them to wait and get hassled with. So this is the reason being where RFID technology can bring them convenience and speed. You see, at the opening the park in 2005, when cast members come in to get their costume, they have to go through a queue and each of the garments are individually barcoded and manually scanned by costume attendant at the counters. So there could be actually some hassles to wait on queue and some wait times. And now with RFID technology, all these hassles has gone, wait time has reduced, and they are coming to the kiosk to scan themselves those garments to be issued. So it's a lot less hassles, they are free, they're more happy than before. So if you want to know how costume magic works, here it is.
Cast member entered in Hong Kong Disneyland costuming. They shop their costume and walk towards the kiosk. They scan their cast member ID and their costume. The screen will show picture of costume and their photo. They confirm the total number and then press done. Cast member finish the issue procedure and they're ready to go on stage in costume.
Well, you see, cast member go through here costuming with hassle-free. All they need to do is spending a good time on stage with the guests. I remember the day when we got this RFID kiosk up and running, the day of launch, we received the good news that we got the internet.
Oops, I'm so sorry.
National awards for these good ideas, and I just took that good news and shared with the team the day, and they took pride of that innovation that has been implemented. I know it takes time and effort to care for your team, but at the end of the day, they're merely feeling more invested and more willing to contribute. As a leader, if my customers are happy, I'm happy. Happy cast, happy leader.
So what are your thoughts around this RFID technology and removing the hassles from the workplace issue of getting a costume?
Well, you made it sound like it was, you know, not his decision, but employees' decisions as well, and they now feel more that he were engaged.
Yeah, he did go to them, and he said, I noticed this is a problem. What if it were more self-service, and you could get your things from self-service, and you didn't have to wait online and have someone help you? And they were like, yeah, like shopping in a department store. And they were very excited about that idea. So he worked with a company, Fujitsu, and the RFID chips, that's the easy part. The harder part is an encapsulation unit, because those garments have to be launched time after time after time after time. So we have found a way to make it almost flat. They no longer have encapsulation units, and you can launder them over and over and over again. A little bit more cost. So typically, you know, I would always say look for sort of, you know, low cost, the low hanging fruit in terms of removing hassles. But what ultimately what this did is it didn't just remove the hassles in Hong Kong. It removed all of the hassles. So at all of our theme parks now, we don't have this problem anymore. We have RFID technology everywhere. And so nobody waits on queue. So you can imagine, if it takes you 7 seconds to check out a garment, how much happier are you when you get on stage? It's a huge, huge difference. Huge difference. You have to be careful, though, when you talk about removing irritations from the workplace. You have to be careful because there's a fine line between productivity manipulation and genuine care. So be careful. So things like RFID technology, that's pretty uncontaminated. But if you made the decision, hey, I'm going to start bringing in lunch every day for my employees. Is lunch, is that uncontaminated care? No, because what basically have I just told you?
Yep, stay here.
Stay at your desk. I don't need you going anywhere. Stay right here. What about if I have a dry cleaning service? It could be uncontaminated, right? Because it could be, I know how long it takes you to get out of here, how long your commute is, and I know that your little boy plays soccer, so if I provide you a dry cleaning service here, then you don't have to make that extra stop on the way home. You can make it to your child's soccer game. What could it also mean? Stay here a little longer. Stay here a little longer. So you just have to be careful. And companies tell us all the time, oh, well, I've got a great example of that. Our wellness program. Is a wellness program uncontaminated? How come? How's it not? How is it contaminated? The company benefits. Anything the company or the leader benefits from can be contaminated. Anything only the individuals benefit from are not contaminated. So this is really what we're talking about. This is a mountain, this is a Skinner box. So if you're familiar with B.F. Skinner, who's a behavioral psychologist, this is a Skinner box. You would teach a mouse to bar press for food with a Skinner box. It's called successive approximation. He looks at the box, you give him a pellet. He walks toward the box, you give him a pellet. He leans on the little bar, you give him a pellet. He touches the bar, you give him a pellet. Successive approximation. The closer I get to doing the behavior you want me to do, the more that you give me. There's the key. The more that you give me. So once you give him lunch, that's not going to be enough. You're going to have to continue to up the ante to continue the manipulation to get the behaviors that you want. So we're saying you must be very cautious of this, because productivity manipulation is in no way genuine care. It's just, you know, teaching somebody to bar press for the right things. Yeah. And you can do it, and it'll work for a little while. But I'll be honest with you, even a mouse will figure out a way around it. You know, even they'll figure out, you don't really want me to die, so I'm not going to bar press anymore, because eventually you'll feed me. So you just got to be careful with the things that you decide to do with regard to care. And moving away from care, to talk just a touch about recognition, so we can take a brief walk. Recognition is a part of this, and it is more powerful than you can ever imagine. It brings so much pride and engagement to the people that are recognized. It's an inexhaustible fuel for your workforce. It energizes people. It excites people to perform the desired behavior. Does anybody in here have a dog? Any dog people in the room? Yeah, I have a dog too. So I have a new puppy. She's 7 months old. It's so hard to be here and not be where she is. Her name is Skeeter, and she's a French bulldog. So here's what I've learned about Skeeter. If I take a piece of chicken in my hand, and I put it down like this, and I walk backwards, how long will she follow me?
As long as you keep walking.
Forever. Because that's what we do. We will perform the desired behaviors over and over and over and over and over to get the chicken, won't we? And we do it because we're human. We don't even know we're doing it. So, you know, if Alma comes to me and she says, Austin, I've had so much fun with you. I'm going to do whatever she wants. Pretty soon I'm turning cartwheels. Because I want to please her. We want to please. We want to. And that's what recognition does. You know, it makes us have that feeling of, when I go to work tomorrow, I'm going to do it even better. And then if she says something to me again, well, if I'm going to do it tomorrow, I'm going to do it better than I did last time. Because that's how good recognition makes us feel. And as just a quick side note, I just want to let you know, it has nothing to do with money. In some roles, people bonus. There's a bonus structure. And that's one thing. But being recognized is something different. And the reason I say it doesn't involve money is because what's going to happen to that money? It's a bag of groceries. It's a bill. You no longer remember what you were recognized for. You know, we give away, I will tell you at Disney, we give away so many movie tickets. It's crazy. We give away experiences. Dinner, movies, a night stay, because it's an experience. And you'll remember an experience long after the money is gone. The second thing about recognition that I want to talk about, you know, other than the fact that, you know, don't necessarily base it on money, is when you do it, can you believe this? Now we have more than just Water Mickey. There's Water Pooh and Piglet. There's Buzz Lightyear and Woody down there. So recognition lasts and lasts and lasts. It's very, very memorable. That same gentleman who was listened to here feels recognized again and again every time he sees one of these water creations that he first created. So it is something that can really live on and live on and live on with your people. And then finally, you had to know this was coming, didn't you? We talked about it with regard to every topic area we've had. It must be specific to culture. So the way you care, the way you recognize, has got to continue to solidify your culture. So that foundational piece of culture, that travels through everything you do. And it should be a part of this as well. At Disney, there is this story at came up from a guest who shared it with us. It's a particular guest who comes to Walt Disney World in Florida on business quite frequently, and he always eats in this restaurant. This restaurant is called the Flying Fish Restaurant. It's at Disney's Boardwalk Resort. Well, there was a particular server one night that had seen him before, and he knew this guy always orders the same thing, and he always orders dessert, and it's always the same dessert. So the server decided, halfway through the gentleman's meal, I'm going to go get him a dessert. I'm just going to bring it to him. So we brought him this dessert, and he set it down in front of him, and he asked the gentleman, "You here on vacation?" He didn't think he was, and the server said, "No, I'm here on business again." And he said, "Well, you know what? Even on business, you need to have a little vacation," and left him the cake. Now, old school food and beverage managers would have done what when you gave away a piece of cake?
Took it out of your check.
Bah! Yeah, took it out of your check. Bah! But that was recognized, because culturally, that's a belief for us. So that was recognizing for culture. That leader going up to that server and saying, "Excellent job. I recognize that guy too. It seems like he's here like every week." Recognizing for culture. So that, believe it or not, wraps up prepared content. But I do want to take a walk with you. And when we come back, that's actually going to be, we're going to have 5 minutes left when we come back. And that's it. And that'll be the end of the day. But I want to take you over and show you care in a backstage area. Because that's where it doesn't have to be beautiful. It does not like training rooms or anything like that. It doesn't have to be gorgeous. But it does need to be something functional that makes people feel cared for. So what I'm going to ask you to do